Hey, it's Jordan and Allison. Before we get into today's episode, I'd like to introduce our sponsor, Jane, a clinic management software and EMR with a human touch.
Whether you're switching your software or going paperless for the first time, the Jane team knows that the onboarding process can feel a little overwhelming. That's why with Jane, you don't just get a software, you get a whole team.
Including in every Jane subscription is their award-winning customer support available by phone, email, and chat whenever you need it, even Saturdays. You can also book a free account setup consultation to review your account and ensure you feel confident about going live.
And if you'd like some extra advice along the way, you can tap into a lovely community of practitioners, clinic owners, and front desk staff through Jane's community Facebook group.
If you're interested in making the switch to Jane, head to jane.app/switch to book a one-on-one demo with a member of their support team.
And don't forget to mention our very special code, EdgeCouch1Mo, at the time of sign up for a 1 month grace period on your new Jane account.
And now on to the episode. Welcome to season 6 of Edge of the Couch. We are here to create a space to delve into the topics that were either shied away from or dismissed because they were too big, too nuanced, too risky, or too uncomfortable to talk about in school or even supervision.
Edge of the Couch is not training or supervision. It is for student therapists, new therapists, and therapists wanting to continue to explore their evolving therapist identities and ways of working. When we are talking about clients, please know we are deeply committed to protecting client confidentiality. We are two passionate therapists and good friends sharing our personal opinions about the therapeutic process.
Come join us at the edge of the couch.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Edge of the Couch. I'm Allison McCleary.
And I'm Jordan Pickell.
Today, we are talking about a topic that Jordan came up with, the practice in therapy of encouraging clients to take relational risks outside of therapy. I love this topic because it really takes the work from theoretical into like practical. And I think it is one of the ways in which we are helping clients to take what they're learning and talking about in session out into the rest of their life. And we can see the way that therapy is like having real impact on their world.
Mm-hmm. I would say for us, this is maybe one of the core pieces about what makes therapy exciting, what the purpose of therapy is. It's essential to the type of therapy we do. It's not necessarily universal to the way that therapy works, but ideally, and this is my obviously theoretical orientation coming, ideally that this would be true of all types of therapy work.
Yeah. When we're talking about skill building and the type of therapy that we're doing, these are the type of skills that we're talking about, and it's so much more like relationally juicy. It's so much more like we're swimming in it together versus teaching something off a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're going to talk about today. So where do you start in all of that, Jordan, talking about encouraging clients to take relational risks in their other relationships, non-therapeutic? Where do you start in thinking about that?
I think maybe first for everyone, we can explain what relational risks means to us. So some of those would be sort of broad, but saying how you feel to someone, asking for what you need, setting a boundary, sharing something vulnerable about yourself, so something about me or something that I've experienced with someone, talking about the relationship, like, hey, how do we feel? Oh, I noticed that we're not feeling as close, something like that. Showing emotion just in general, sharing how much the relationship means to you, which I guess is similar to talking about the relationship, but it's like that tender expressing love. And bringing up a sensitive topic, knowing it will likely bring up conflict.
Yeah, very challenging.
What we're going to be talking about is how we support clients with it. And then something that we don't have control over is how it actually goes with these other people.
Yeah.
And when conflict happens, we have no idea how the other person is going to respond. Especially in something like that, people can get really defensive.
Oh, sure.
We call it a risk because you are at risk of being hurt.
Yeah. I think the only one I would add to your list is a client also saying no if they're not someone who often says no.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a bit of a relational risk. But yes, I completely agree. What we're saying is that the client is going out and either starting a conversation or responding in a new way in a dynamic. It could be any relation. It could be a partnership, a sibling, a parent, a neighbor, a boss, any relationship. And they are going out and they are taking some type of relational risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Starting dating is also, I think, often like a kind of relational risk, like putting yourself out there, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
In all of these, it's in some way vulnerability, but it's a very particular kind of vulnerability within a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It can go really well and you get closer and you feel more energized and you feel like you can be more of your whole self.
Yes.
Or it can not go well. And then either the relationship falls apart or you do feel hurt
or embarrassed. Or less
embarrassed, ashamed. Like it can go in a lot of different directions.
Yeah.
Of course, as therapists, we're hoping that it moves towards more confident. They know what they want. They know who they are and that they can show the parts of them that they feel comfortable sharing in different contexts.
So at the core of this, you and I agree that the practice for all of these skills is happening in the therapeutic relationship. Mm-hmm. So when we conceptualize the therapeutic relationship as a microcosm of the types of relationships our clients have outside of the therapy room, that this is why you and I prioritize things like check-in and frankness and, like an earlier episode from the season, like circling back to those elephants in the room. That is practice not only for us as clinicians, but also practice for the clients in how to talk about rupture and repair, how to talk about a relationship, the how are we doing conversations, practice giving feedback, whether it's positive or negative. So there's this kind of like bi-directional practicing. And we as the clinicians are often stepping into a kind of modeling. I mean, and not in like an infantilizing way, but just in a like, this is a good place to practice how to talk about things that are tender, vulnerable, scary, risky in this kind of contained, safer place.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It is so embedded in the work.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about the process in every session. How was this for you?
Yes.
How did it feel when I said this or showed up in this way? They are learning the language. Sometimes it's like, this is us practicing what it can look like outside of therapy. Like I often say that towards the beginning of the therapeutic work, and I might say that explicitly, but often it's just this slow skill building.
Mm-hmm.
There might be some explicit conversations that they want to have or that have come up with a certain relationships in their life. And we will talk about that explicitly. But generally, this work is happening all the time in the type of work that we do. It's not like, okay, step one.
Say how you feel.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Though it does work out that way. I think people really do learn how to have these conversations.
And this is why I tend to celebrate when a client tells me something that I have done wrong or that has hurt them, that they feel I fumbled. All feedback is wonderful and it's great to hear about what's working. And generally, I think it's easier to give someone positive feedback than, you know, to say, hey, it really bothers me when you do this. I'm not like, you know, hooting and hollering right when they say it. But as I'm sitting with a client, I'm thinking, this is really good. It doesn't feel good, you know, to get whatever complicated feedback. But as the clinician, I can conceptualize like this is a really great step because most clients that I work with anyway, some of my clients are very good at giving, you know, constructive criticism. Sure. Mm-hmm. But most clients feel uncomfortable telling their clinician something that they've done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so once they are doing that, I'm thinking like this is progress. This is great.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, that might be the only place where they've ever been able to give that kind of feedback, depending on sort of the types of friendships that they have and the family relationships that they built. But I mean, for some clients, even saying the good stuff.
Yes.
Oh, I care about our relationship feels so vulnerable. So yeah, it's all of the different ways that people can show up in relationships. That it's not just how do we navigate conflict. It's also how do we show care? How do we show emotion and have some kind of trust that the person will be able to receive it?
Is there reciprocity in the care?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, I feel really close to you as a client. Are you able to hold that?
In the therapeutic relationship, it's less of a risk.
Yeah.
So that's also part of this.
We hope.
Yeah. So it's part of that step-by-step process where they can share more about things that bother them, some pieces of feedback or showing emotion. They know that they can feel safe with me because, like you said, ideally I'm not going to reject them because that's sort of assumed in the therapy process, in therapy. And to their brains, it still feels really, really risky. So yeah. to have that reflected back, like, oh, I share something really vulnerable and the person doesn't reject me, then I have this stronger sense of I could do this in places where it is riskier.
There's almost the beginning of like those corrective emotional experiences mm-hmm. that my brain is telling me, saying, you know, saying, hey, 3 weeks ago when you did this really hurt me. My brain is telling me that that could end the relationship. It's really scary. And then I do it, which is great. Take the risk. And it doesn't happen. And there's kind of like, oh, okay, this opens up the possibility that I can talk about complicated things with people mm-hmm. and it not go horribly.
Yep.
But let's imagine a client comes to you and they say, hey, you know, it doesn't always happen this way, but let's pretend that it does. Okay. That they say like, you know, my sister did this thing last Christmas. It really bothered me. Here's Christmas coming up. I feel myself bothered by it. I really think I should talk to her about it. What do you do next when a client kind of brings something like that to the table?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is really getting granular about how they feel, how they feel about it. Maybe how it went too, but mostly about how they feel. Because sometimes what they want to say and how they feel are sometimes at odds, you know? And so if we can get really clear on what is it you want, what is it you feel like is the type of vulnerability that you want to get to, the level of vulnerability that you want to get to, because sometimes it's just setting a boundary and leaving it as is. Sometimes it will be having a heart-to-heart conversation.
Yeah.
So maybe getting really getting into the details about how they feel and what they would hope for, what they would want.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that would be the first.
I think that's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really big to understand the why. What is driving you to want to have this conversation or to do things differently or to say no or, you know, to share how you feel like we kind of talked about earlier. And then what are you hoping will happen is so helpful to know. I think sometimes client expectations are maybe like pretty idealistic. Like, I hope that I can tell this person this and then we're everything's the exact same and we're just as close and there's no change in the relationship. And oftentimes when we, I don't know, say something, you know, especially when it's like, here's something you did that hurt me. It's hard to just, for everything to just feel the exact same unless there's like avoidance going on. So this is where once a client has identified something that they'd like to do differently or a conversation that they'd like to have or a practice that they'd like to enact. Like, I want to be asking for more of what I want in all my relationships, right? Sometimes there's kind of like that blanket that I'm also going to have conversations with them. Here are maybe some ways that it could go, or what are the ways that you think it could go once you do this thing or start, you know, implementing this new practice?
Something that I find interesting that comes up every once in a while in our conversations is our idea of what clients usually think or usually go into is different. Is it that we have different client populations or is it our own experiences that we're projecting on clients?
Yeah,
because my feeling about clients that I work with is that they actually they catastrophize of what might happen. So it's not that things will stay the same. It's that everything will change and it'll be terrible.
No, but I was asking what they hope will happen. Yeah.
And so usually they will happen. Okay. So what they hope will happen is that things will stay the same.
Yes.
Okay.
What they think will happen is that like they'll never have any friends and it'll be, and they'll, you know, never do it ever again because it was the worst thing that ever happened. Yeah.
So some questions that I might ask are around what would you hope, like in the ideal situation, like if you were being super, super honest and not concerned about how they might respond, what would you say to them?
Yes. Love that.
And sometimes they could say it exactly like that. It's not that confrontational.
Right.
Oh, you hurt me when blah, blah, blah. Or when you said that thing last Christmas, it made me feel this way. And then I respond with, what might happen if you were to say that? Exactly how you said it to me. And it's not, you should say that. It's, let's imagine.
Yeah.
Let's imagine what that might look like. Or how does that feel when you say it? Because maybe when you say it out loud, it doesn't sound as confrontational as it did in your mind.
I've seen it kind of both ends of the spectrum. So I've definitely had that thing. What would you say? And it's like, I'm not available on Saturday to help you move. I'm sorry. Oh, that's like a very reasonable, like not confrontational. And then I think I've seen the other side where people will like, you were a terrible this.
Right.
Da, 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 and they go like really harsh. And I'm like, ooh, okay. Do you want to be able to maintain that relationship? And that's a conversation I'll have too with people is like, is the goal to maintain the relationship or is the goal to be heard in this mm-hmm. thing? Mm-hmm. And there are some times where people are not looking at how to retain that relationship. They just really need to say something. But most of the time, at least with my clients, it's like they want the relationship to continue, but they feel this internal sense of like something has to change in how we are relating to each other. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, yeah, okay, let's talk about how you want to say it. Sometimes they've already got it, like you're saying. Sometimes it is like, hey, let's practice. Like, I think I want to say to people sometimes, like, how would you react if someone said it like that to you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would become really defensive if that's how someone brought something up to me.
Right.
And so there's almost like the DBT, like interpersonal effectiveness skills stuff that can mm-hmm. come into this of, do we want to maintain the relationship? You know, do you want to get fired from your job? Probably not. So that's, you know, we're going to have to find a different way to talk to your boss or your colleagues, right? I think that there's also those types of conversations can be in the mix as well.
That's when maybe part of it is, let's get a groundedness in how you feel. Let's figure out how you feel and really get it contained and grounded before we go into a conversation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think a tricky place that therapists can find themselves in is thinking of it as a step-by-step process sometimes, where it's like, let's talk about the conversation you're going to have.
Yeah.
Rather than let's imagine what it could be. Because yes. Unless it's a time-sensitive thing, and even then, I don't want it to be like homework. Like, hey, between now and next week, we put together this plan. Why don't you have this conversation?
I agree.
Because you're setting them up to not do it and then feel like embarrassed or ashamed.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't feel ready, or maybe they actually don't want to. And it was just enough to imagine having that conversation. Yep. And then realizing, you know what, actually, it's not really worth it to me. It was just nice to imagine. Like, it just felt like I just needed to get that off my chest. And now it doesn't bother me in the same way.
Yeah. Well, sure. I mean, who hasn't imagined like storming into a boss's office and like saying all the things and then hightailing it out of there? And then you don't do that most times. Or, you know, who hasn't considered writing an email that really is just like saying it like it is? But again, I think it goes down to the relationship too. There's something about saying to our therapist, here are the things I want to say. Mm-hmm. And our therapist, you know, legitimizing those things or being like, yeah, totally. And what would that feel like? And how would that be for you? That mm-hmm. it brings us into our body and then it dissipates maybe the like sense of urgency.
I really leave it up to the client in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You could yell at them. You totally could yell at them. That's totally up to you.
Mm-hmm.
That is a valid choice considering how that went down. Yeah. And what would that feel like? What kind of outcome would that, you know, what would that look like if you were to yell?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's not how you want to go about it. Sometimes that is the right choice, yelling.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And sometimes storming into your boss's office and telling them that they're horrible and that they've been awful to you and quitting on the spot is the great thing to do.
It's like what feels in integrity for the client.
And I think that when we get to talking about integrity and kind of like self-worth, I like to talk to clients about why taking the risk is valuable for them and for all people, for, you know, relational risk being valuable as like a human thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, if we are not saying the thing that remains unspoken as a client, if we're not setting different boundaries in our relationships, if we are not discussing a hurt with someone who hurt us, we can feel out of alignment with our integrity, or we can feel something blocks us from feeling closer to that person, or we ruminate on it. And that's a good indicator, like something here is worth going deeper with in some way. Mm-hmm. And so this is where we can circle into like, right, this is why taking risks is valuable. Mm-hmm. It makes us feel more in our integrity often.
Yep. More in our integrity, we get closer to people. And that's part of why I'm not going to go into, okay, the therapist way, you know, the corporate speak that people have talked about, like, oh, therapy speak. That's not always what we're hoping that clients go into. Like, if you're in a heated conversation, we aren't always telling clients, like, so when you did that, it hurt me.
I know.
Yeah. I disagree with you or whatever it is. Like, how
you hurt my feelings.
Yes, you hurt my feelings. Yeah. I would hope that therapists, that we are getting to a place where we're helping clients be authentic and grounded and in their integrity in a way that is also serving them.
Yeah. And it's not like disconnected from feeling. Mm-hmm. Have you seen all those? There are these really funny TikTok videos that are like treating a breakup like it's an HR conversation.
Mm. I've seen that. And there's like friendship breakups. Yeah. There was that one. And,
oh, that my really God. Blew up. That was so bad. Yeah. These ones are more like jokey. That one was weird, like advicey. I'll never do it justice. But it's a joke, right? Of like treating the conversation like it's the HR department. And when that's levity, great. That's not how we want relationships to feel. We want to go in maybe feeling like prepared and we have something to say, but we don't want it to be like stripped of its humanness.
I really like this because there has been a movement in therapy and the popular understanding of therapy that we are trying to strip people of their actual whole emotion. And it's just about, okay, how do you strip that away? Be super grounded. Like that's the language. Be super
grounded.
Only
logical.
And say the thing in this very bloodless, like you're saying, corporate speak. That's where us as therapists and our training can sometimes bleed into the work that we do. Because a lot of therapists are like that. Like,
and a lot of therapists are teaching clients to be like that.
I know.
You know, talking about the DBT skills. I like the DBT skills on the face of them, but I have heard the DBT skills be so warped for people in this exact way. I've heard people, the clients say, well, through my DBT skills, I was really taught this, and now I don't know how to feel my feelings. Or it doesn't feel like I'm allowed to be angry, like feel angry when I'm having a heated conversation with someone. And I just absolutely hate that.
Yeah. As somebody with my childhood background, a lot of the work is actually learning how to bring those emotions back.
Totally.
Stripping the emotion away is also for some people a survival strategy.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And so to be able to be like, I'm mad at you and I sound mad is progress because I'm being more authentic.
I think, too, the zones of regulation stuff, window of tolerance has been in some ways also used in this, where it's like you have to be in your window of tolerance. I don't agree with that either. I think that when we're having really complicated, risky discussions, I don't think we're always in our window of tolerance. And I don't think that's an inherently bad thing. Again, all of this depends on context and the person and what their history is with conversation and what they're trying to say. Again, if we're scream yelling at someone, but we went in there hoping it would have gone differently, then maybe there is something to talk about. You know, how do we go into that differently? But these are complicated situations where I think it makes sense to cry or raise your voice, sound frustrated or hurt. I don't want us to be like sanitizing the content.
We do a lot of work in preparing clients in imagining what it will look like. And then we as therapists have to imagine, okay, well, how do we build resilience so that if and when it doesn't go well, that they will be okay.
Totally. I think that when it comes to this specific topic, helping clients take relational risks, this is a huge chunk of the work that I'm doing with my clients because often they already have the verbiage. Often they already, through the course of therapy, can connect to their feelings. I don't want to rush a client to have the conversation before we've talked about, hey, what are the potential outcomes? So I talked with them about like, okay, what if it goes really well? What if it goes badly? What if nothing changes? Like you have this whole conversation and then it doesn't feel like the dynamic shifts at all. What if it doesn't feel satisfying? You finally say the thing and you leave just kind of feeling like, bleh. What if you were expecting a sense of closure and there isn't one? And what if it ultimately ends the relationship? That is, I think, often the biggest fear clients have around romantic relationships, familial relationships, friendships. Certainly, if I start talking to my friends about this thing, are they still going to be my friend? And so I want to talk to my clients about these potentials. And I also want to be talking about, I believe that you can survive no matter what. Survive it, be okay, no matter what the outcome is. How do we, I love the word fortifying, how do we fortify our clients to one of the possibilities or what will inevitably happen? Because something's going to happen. Here is what I see in you. This is the progress I've noticed. I know you're capable of getting through really hard things because of all this stuff that we've already talked about and you've already gone through. And again, circling back to that meaning-making piece around why is it important to have the conversation, even if the risk is the end of the potential end of the relationship? Mm-hmm. We get into integrity. We get into a desire to have authentic relationships where we can say something to a friend and it not shatter our friendship. Mm-hmm. If someone ends a relationship with me when I am trying to be real with them in this way, then maybe that's not the type of friendship that I want. Like that kind of energy, that's hard to sell to clients. It doesn't feel good. But I'm wondering your thoughts about all of that.
I think it helps to make the sign of success just having the conversation to begin
totally.
With.
Totally.
It'll go the way that it goes. And the fact that you had the courage to bring this up is huge.
It's the win.
Now you've been able to do it and you're going to be able to do it again. So maybe,
I completely agree.
Maybe it ends the relationship, but I think more likely, most likely scenarios is that, you know, it brings up conflict. Mm-hmm. Maybe they feel weird. They feel hurt. You know, we haven't talked about like when it comes together and the person really does yeah. hear them and they don't reject them. And it feels like this coming together and how beautiful and healing that is. But yes, you will be okay no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. And it will have been worth it because you practiced doing yes. it, because you did it, because
totally.
You are, like you said, you're stretching this muscle or you're building this muscle. It makes you in your integrity, even if it doesn't go well.
Exactly. And I love landing there with clients before they have the conversation, maybe after, right? If they're processing and there's sadness or frustration or embarrassment, it takes so much strength to say or do something in a relationship that is risky. And you did that. Mm-hmm. Not having the goal be do the thing and it goes great. Mm-hmm. There's a piece in here around, you know, helping clients to recognize that they have no control over how another person responds, what mm-hmm. they do. We can go into a situation and say the most emotionally intelligent, well-stated piece of content ever to someone, and it can still explode mm-hmm. because we have no control over what's going on with someone else. So I love that we center the, like, taking the risk is the thing that is a big deal.
And they know that at the end of it, they can come back to therapy and we can talk about it.
Yep.
Because sometimes it doesn't feel like that big of an ask or that vulnerable of a thing, but it feels that to the client. And then I'm just like, yeah, tell your friend. Just try it. So that's when maybe I'm rushing it. And then when it doesn't go well and it reinforces maybe a belief the client has about, I say this thing and I'll be rejected. That's when I'm like, no. Yeah. We did all this work trying to get you to be able to say the thing and then for it to not be responded to in the ideal way or actually like you're downright rejected. That can be really hard as a therapist because you're like, you don't have the control over those other people.
I know.
The fact that that really small pushback, like just saying no to that, really? Then maybe that means reevaluating the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It helps to come back to therapy and contextualize what that was actually like and what that means to the client, to their relationships, to them long term. Yeah. So I also think that talk about fortify. They know that they can come back with us and mm-hmm. talk it over.
Sometimes the people that our clients are in relationship with have benefited from our clients not speaking about these things, not talking about their feelings, not naming when they're hurt, not setting boundaries, not saying no. And so even when we know that the request or the thing the client is talking about does feel really like quite minimal, we think, huh, okay, this is interesting that it feels so risky for the client to mm-hmm. say, you know, I'm unavailable or you hurt my feelings or you forgot to pick me up, whatever. They can be mm-hmm. such seemingly minimal things and they feel big for the client. And then we realize that the relationship was orbiting around the client not talking about those things and it kind mm-hmm. of buckles under the smallest amount of pressure. It can be really painful for clients to realize that their perception of the quality of a relationship is different from what it is. Mm. And it's painful to watch clients hurt in that way. It makes me think about, you know, when clients will say, I kind of feel like I'm always the one reaching out to my friend. So I just didn't text them mm-hmm. to see how long it would take. And it's mm-hmm. been 8 months and I haven't heard from them. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like, ow. It like really dagger to the heart. Like that sucks. It's so mm-hmm. painful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes I come in with the idea that the client has a distorted view of the reality you think that it's a big risk, but maybe it's not. And then when they tell me that, I go, okay, so I was wrong.
Was a big risk.
That is a realistic understanding of these relationships. And you're right, that having that kind of teeny tiny pushback or teeny tiny reveal of who you actually are and how you actually feel upends the relationship. That's information that now we can work from.
Totally.
Maybe in this moment, I'm like, okay, I need to, really listen to clients rather than thinking that a lot of clients are more fearful than they need to be. Sometimes they are rightfully, having an accurate read.
Totally.
Yeah.
And this makes me also consider timeline stuff. As new therapists, we might, when a client brings up something like this, like, I really want to talk to my mom about this thing, we might feel a sense of, okay, let's get there quickly. But this can sometimes take months for clients to really sit on, maybe work up the nerve, really consider. So we might have a felt sense of like, wow, my client is really looping back to this place. And I think that's kind of normal in this type of process. It can take clients a really long time to feel ready to have a conversation, write the letter, send the message, knock on the door, whatever. And so as therapists, we have to really journey alongside in these moments and not pressure and not push and realize that clients might know, well, clients do know more about their dynamics than we do. And so they might be able to accurately judge the risk more. And that's why it can take 8 months to send the letter. And so as a new therapist, I'm kind of saying, if you're listening, if you notice yourself going back to this place a lot, I think that's normal, and try not to rush it and try to like really sink into the patience of, we're building towards something here. Even if it's not happening tomorrow.
It should totally be up to the client. I think that's a mistake that therapists do make, is understanding really clearly that this is the work. Like, this is the piece of work that we can do, and it feels really tangible and workable. And there are a lot of reasons why a client doesn't do it right away. And again, we want to get to a place where they're in their integrity and not doing it to please us.
Oh, totally.
Being the good client and having a conversation, that's because that's what my therapist told me to do. We want them to listen to themselves.
I really like when a client will say, like, I'm not ready to do it. Great. That's so good to know. And if you feel me pressuring you, be like, Allison, stop. Because I don't live in your life. Sometimes clients doing things different really does throw a bomb into their world. And you know, sometimes clients only have one friend group and then one little thing and then all their friends are gone. And I don't want to be the like catalyst for that. And I want that to feel like it's come from a place of empowerment for the client. I believe my clients can get through hard things, but I don't want to like shove them into the hard things.
Yeah. As clients work that muscle and practice that skill, they will come to therapy and be like, so I had this really big conversation with my mom that we didn't even talk about. It was just like, oh yeah, it's been sitting on my heart for this long. And sometimes it doesn't feel that big of a deal to them because it's been this slow build up to that place. But sometimes I sit there like, you would not have had that conversation a year ago. And
totally,
it sounds like it just came up and you said the thing and you didn't have to do all this planning ahead of time. It's just, it feels more intuitive at some point.
I love that. Right. This is where, you know, when the relationship with the therapeutic relationship is such a rich place to practice that we often don't even know what the client is taking away from it, learning through it, getting out of it. And it's not the only thing. But the therapeutic relationship is huge.
Oh, what a great place to land. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too. When I read the topic and then I like wrote a whole page of notes.
My hand hurts.
I was like, my hand is literally cramping. As always, we want to know what you think. Have you witnessed your clients practice in the therapeutic relationship and then take relational risks in their other relationships? Is that something that you have seen happen or haven't yet, want to see happen? You can send us a DM at Edge of the Couch Pod on Instagram. You can join our Patreon community, patreon.com/edgeofthecouch. And we've been putting a lot of consistent content on there. One episode a week. There are some extra episodes. We talk about things, I think, in a much more frank way. And we share more of our personal lives over there. Or you can send us an email, connect@edgeofthecouch.com.
Yay.
Yay. It's a mouthful.
Thanks, everyone.
We'll see you next week.
Hey, this is Shelby from Jane, an online clinic management software and EMR. Here at Jane, we understand that switching clinic software can feel a little overwhelming. You're not alone. That's why with Jane, you don't just get a software, you get a whole support team dedicated to your success. With unlimited phone, email, and live chat support included in every Jane subscription, we're here with you every step of the way. You can also book a one-on-one account setup consultation to review your settings before going live. And to help make the move as smooth as possible, we offer a free data import from an experienced team. Our import specialists ensure that the data from your current software or filing cabinet is smoothly transferred to all the right spots. If you'd like some extra advice along the way, tap into a lovely community of practitioners, clinic owners, and front desk staff through Jane's community Facebook group. Head to jane.app/switch to book a personalized demo. Or if you're ready to get started, you can mention the show at sign up for a 1 month grace period on your new account.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email at connect@edgeofthecouch.com to tell us what you think, ask a question, or let us know what type of episode you'd love to hear. You can even send us a voice note for us to play in a future episode.
You can support us by giving us a review on Apple Podcasts, sharing the show with a friend, or supporting us on Patreon.
Join us next time at the Edge of the Couch.